not working here. Okay, now it is. I want it to record. The spirituality that is implicit in the principles and the practices of nonviolent communication, the spirituality that is the work that I call living compassion. So there's a relationship between what I experience as nonviolent communication, the principles, but there's deeper implications that I've made explicit through this, and in particular what I call the spirituality of the process. So do the best you can to, this is an intellectual or conceptual framework. Don't get too lost or caught up if you're not following it, but I think it gives some sort of conceptual support for the practices that we're going to engage in. So one of the ways that I conceptualize this work in conjunction with a lifelong spiritual practice, the traditional or esoteric spirituality, is focused on the realization of the self. Self-realization, whatever they want to call it, awakening. And so the focus on the individual inner being, the self, whatever that is, it has different names. And my own, I guess, awareness or discovery of what is the relationship between the essential nature of what nonviolent communication is, which I see as the universal human needs, how are the needs related to spirit or the self? And this is just a simple framework that I've come to. Let's just say we start from the top down. We say that essentially what our true nature is what it is. And I use words like the self, soul, and inner being synonymously or interchangeably. They're the same word that refers to the same reality. And if we are to live the self in life, live who we really are in life, which is my experience, what I sense to be, that this is what life is about, this is our purpose in some form or another. How do we access this direct recognition and living of the self? And one of the ways, if we were to look at the unfolding, what I call that, if the self or the soul is to unfold, one of the first elements that we find are there are properties or qualities of the self. That this is naturally who we are. I've heard Marshall years ago said that we are naturally compassionate. Many spiritual teachers talk about the natural compassion that is essentially our being. So compassion is not separate from the self. It is a property of the self. We are naturally that way. And there are different qualities like love, freedom, whatever the many different qualities are, when we can actually have a direct experience of the nature of the self. Maybe creativity. And so most, I think, spiritual practices are around coming to a direct experience, a direct awakening, and then a living in what our true nature is, living the self in life. But how do we access that? We can't get the direct experience by simply reading about it or thinking about it. It's not an intellectual experience. It's a direct experience. There are many approaches to it. The approach that I find to be very helpful is the way that we can access the qualities of the self is through the heart. So this is something we can feel. When we feel our longings, that's not an intellectual exercise. The longings of the heart are ways that are, is a way, a pathway, a portal, through which we can actually start to directly feel the nature of the self. So that when I am in the experience of longing, when I long for a quality of being, longing for freedom, longing for clarity, awakening, fullness. For me, these longings are the way that we can directly access the nature and the qualities of our inner being. And then one of the beautiful elements of nonviolent communication is it helps us to identify the human needs, our universal human needs, which I see as the core element of this process. And so for me, needs are an aspect of the longings. When I can touch into my deep longings for freedom, then I can identify that as a need for freedom, or the value that I hold for living freely, freely choosing, not acting from obligation, from sense of pressure, but acting from the sense of freely choosing what it is that I want to live in my life. And so when I further look at the unfolding, universal human needs and values unfold or are connected or linked to the longings of the heart. It can be said that they're modifications of the longings, still the same energy, the same quality. So in this way, our universal human needs are a doorway to spirit, where we can actually feel the embodied energetic quality of our needs. And when we are feeling this sense of authenticity and wholeness, we don't always recognize it consciously. And so that's another step. But my experience is that we are actually living in and inhabiting the qualities of our true nature. So it's no longer an abstraction. When I feel love embodied purely, the kind of love that's unconditioned, kind of love that has no history, but the quality of love that I live in relationship to life and others, I'm actually inhabiting the nature of my being, of the nature of the soul. And this is, I believe, is the one of the highest purposes of life. This is the purpose of life as I experience it. And if it resonates with you, then it is true for you too. But so for me, one of the things that nonviolent communication adds, I think, or completes the spirituality of awakening is that it's not just realizing the self, but it's coming to live fully the self in life, the self in relationship. It means as we navigate how we can be with one another by communicating our true self in others and seeing them in their needs. And this is one of the principles of nonviolent communication. One of the principles is that I am always expressing myself in love, my true self. So it's a twofold spiritual practice. So that the self-soul inner being expresses through a life force. It's not an abstraction. It's a living, vibrating, feeling life force that we feel in and through the body. The life force manifests through our emotions. Everything that is our aliveness is our life force. The life force manifests through our thinking. Every manifest form of life is an expression of a modification of the life force. And then the life force then further, in a more specific and focused way, manifests as my longings, my needs, and my values. This is one of the essential features of the work that we'll be participating in this week. So we talk about life force, we're really talking about that subtle but strong quality of aliveness and energy that is dynamic and always moving in and through me. So anytime anyone wants to pause and ask a question for clarification, please don't hesitate. There's a lot of material here, so. And so, yes.
So do you say that longings are not the same as needs?
Well, what I say is that longings are the same needs, are the same as needs, in a different modified form. It's the same energy. So if I long for belonging in a group, that longing is a quality of my life force, longing for a particular quality of living in life. and I may identify as belonging. So there's a very specified quality that I long for.
Yeah, but that's when I would call that the need of belonging. So again, I should
same thing. You're languaging it in a different way.
Okay.
I say I have a need for belonging. I long for belonging. It is a manifestation of my life force that moves me towards living in a community of people, whether it's family or whatever. And belonging is to participate in life in the particular way that I call belonging. So I'm glad you brought that up, because there's a point here that I think is really valuable in living this process, whether you want to call it nonviolent communication or living compassion, which is the use of language and the terminology that we use to experience and to express our experience. It's very important that we are able to hold our language loosely and not be, I'm not suggesting that this is what you were saying, Nicholas, but not be too dogmatic and locked into a particular language or word as how we express this dynamic flow of our experiencing. So some of the language that I'm using may sound a little bit different than the way or the jargon that we use or that we've discovered or that we practice in nonviolent communication. So the questions for clarification are useful, so I appreciate hearing that. I'm hoping that as you hear these words, you are maybe sensing into it and feeling intuitively what I'm saying, as well as intellectually. So even as you're hearing me now as I'm speaking, my sense is that you are receiving these words. Your being is receiving them. There is a life energy and a life force coming from me to you, and you're receiving them and taking them in. And they are either resonating in you, or maybe there's a dissonance and not so much a resonance. Whatever the case is. So, and in this work, there's what I call, these are like these overriding sort of general context. So I consider that this is a twofold way of living, a twofold spiritual life practice. And that's really all it is. I like to sort of live in the space of simplicity with this. This, when I get into complexity, then I tend to go into my mind and get confused and lose the simplicity of being, the simplicity of simply being alive. So the simplicity of how I see this twofold spiritual life practice is that if it's true that who I am, what my nature is, the truth of this being, this individuality, I call the self or the soul, is the purpose and the force of being in life is to live fully in life. That means in the flow. Without freed from the obstructions of anger and fear and violence and judgment. If that's my purpose, then a life, one part of the spiritual life practice is to cultivate, it means to develop and live in this flow. One of the practices that I've developed is dyad meditation on the beauty of needs. The term beauty of needs is a phrase that refers to an experience. It's the experience that's more important, not the phrase. So this is a practice. When we cultivate, and we'll, after I do this talk, we'll invite you into an experience. I'll guide you into a whole group experience of what I mean by this. So when we have an experience of fulfillment, of enjoyment in life, when we experience that most of the time when we're in an experience of fulfillment or enjoyment, we can say that something is being fulfilled. Our need or needs are being fulfilled. What we value is being fulfilled and met. When we are in this experience, it's a total experience. and we don't necessarily reflect on it or think about it. We're just immersed in it. When we're in an experience of, when we're in this experience, it's an embodied experience. All of us participates. When you might think of an experience in which you were in enjoyment or fulfillment. Something was really going your way or working for you. When you reflect on it, there is an embodiment, a sense, and there's sensations that go with this. You can call it excitement, thrill, clarity, groundedness, a sense of empowerment, play. All of these qualities are inherent when we are living in the flow. And there's the part of the practice, a good part of the practice in this work that we'll engage in, is developing and cultivating this flow. It happens perhaps accidentally for most of us, but I think it's an important practice to be able to develop. What do I do to cultivate this flow? And there are a number of ways that we can do it. I'm sure there are ways in your own individual life and your own practices that you have found to cultivate the flow. Does anybody not have any question about what I mean by being in the flow of life? And so one of the wings, I guess, one of the legs of this spiritual practice is to cultivate and live in this flow. So, and as we know, when we are doing that, life happens, life is always happening, and that we find ourselves in an experience from time to time that isn't in the flow.
What you say, Robert, make me it's important just to be able to notice when there is such sensation, to be in the flow,
yes,
in order to know what to do to cultivate it.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's part of cultivating it.
Okay.
It's not a self-conscious thing. You go, oh no, I'm in the flow. Wow. Because sometimes that stops it. But to notice and to allow it and to dwell in it or bathe in it. So I notice the sensation, so I enjoy it consciously. I notice the love or the warmth or the joy or the play or the peace that arises in my heart, and I simply consciously enjoy it. I'm not self-consciously reflecting on it, but I'm enjoying it. And there's a noticing in that. And when I notice this, I believe that what happens is that I use the metaphor of a muscle. It's like when we cultivate, it's like building a muscle. We strengthen it. And we build it sort of psycho-neurobiologically. So it's cognitive, it's psychological, cognitive. It's neurobiological in the sense that it goes into our very nervous system. We start to build neural pathways in and through our brain. I mean, there's many practices. I'm looking at Tiffany and she's smiling because I think that's the heart of a lot of yogic practice, is that we build the neurobiology and the body. So the conscious biological sensations that are in this energetic flow is something that we, by conscious attention to, we build it. It grows. And the more we practice it, the more capacity that we have, that we develop, to inhabit the flow, to live in. And then what we also notice in life, I don't think anybody is free from this, otherwise we wouldn't be here, is that we encounter situations in life in which what our inner experience is anything but flow. I call those obstructions. We experience suffering, disconnection. We are disconnected. Primarily, the disconnection is an internal subjective experience in relationship to a life event. So if somebody says something or does something in relation to me, or maybe just in my field where I can view it, and one of the initial experiences that I have that triggers the obstruction or the disconnection is there's an immediate recoil. You know what I mean by recoil? It's like a spring. A spring recoils and push it, and it pulls back like a rubber band. And so there's an immediate recoil, there's an energetic and a psychological shock. And when that shock happens, various levels of contraction occur. The energy contracts. It becomes tight in my sensations. It becomes held and very limited in the nature of emotions that I can feel. And I believe the emotional and sensational experiences generally are forms of fear, which is a sort of flight, or fight, which is aggression and judgment, or some form of frozen fear, a numbness. So forms of fight, flight, or fear occur. So when this occurs, one of the essential elements is the ability to recognize that this recoil, this reaction, is mine. It's mine. In other words, it is taking place within this system. Now, I may not be able to consciously recognize that it's mine, because my conditioning tells me that it's anything other than mine. It's your fault. If only this situation or this event or the environment was different, then I would be at peace and I would be okay. So the recognition that we tend to assign blame to the other person, to the situation, to the event, is one of the characteristics of this mechanism that keeps us contracted, disconnected, and in a suffering state. So the other part of this spiritual practice is when I find myself out of the flow, when I find myself reacting, with all the many patterns of reactions that you are all familiar with in your life, then there is a practice. The practice is to restore the flow through compassion. For me, this is the only thing I know how to do. I'm either enjoying the flow, enjoying my life, surrendering to the enjoyment of life and flow, or I'm in a contracted state, even if it's just a little bit, and turning my attention from the environment that a part of my mind thinks is responsible for my pain, and looking at my inner life with compassion. It's only in this way that I believe that the whole, my wholeness, my flow, my authentic self can be restored to its wholeness, and then I'm more available to then live in authentic presence with life, with the other. It doesn't mean that we might not benefit from a loving and compassionate presence in a group or another person offering us empathy, that somehow that presence helps to restore the flow. The principle isn't that we necessarily do it within ourselves, but that it's a function of presence. The activity, it's the reality of presence, whether I receive it from another or whether I am able to find it within myself, is the condition that allows the healing and the restoration of my wholeness and the flow. This is just the naming of a principle of what the practices that we'll be engaged in. So it's a twofold practice: to enjoy, cultivate, to develop my authentic wholeness, the flow in life, and to restore it within myself and between myself and others with compassion and with presence when it's obstructed or broken flow. So, any response? I hope I'm just to make sure I'm making myself clear. Yes.
Just to make sure that I get this correctly. So you say restoring the flow of love is happening through compassion. Mm. Can be within myself.
Yes.
I can do this alone, self-compassion. I can also do this with others.
Yeah.
And the thing that makes compassion so valuable for restoring the flow is presence. Because
yes.
Through compassion you can cultivate presence.
Yeah. My experience is that presence and compassion are elements of the same dynamic. Compassion cannot be there without presence. And with presence there's a natural flow of compassion. I'll be describing this in many different ways. One of the ways that I define compassion is it's a spaciousness. There's a presence, but there's a spacious, open, non-judgmental attending to whatever is being lived, whether it's with myself or another person. So when I'm compassionate to, just say, an inner aspect of myself that I have not been compassionate to because I'm harsh or judging or denying it, compassion invites and allows that into the space. And when that happens, it means I'm attending to an aspect of myself. Attention can be said as the light of awareness or the light of consciousness. So I'm shining the light of awareness onto an aspect that has not had light shined on it. So there's a part of myself, to say, there's the angry self when I get angry, that I'm judging and pushing away, trying to get over and blaming myself for it. All of those activities perpetuate that angry part of myself being pushed to the margins of my being and not fully included and allowing that aspect of myself. When I allow and invite any part of myself that I pushed away, then that part starts to change, starts to move and shift, because it is being seen. This is the principle, I think, of self-empathy. I attend to the inner experience, and that aspect begins to relax. It's being seen, understood, accepted, and that's the healing process.
Yeah.
Was there a question? Yeah.
Yeah. When I listened to you, a situation I just recently had came back to my mind. Someone who was dear to me said something to me, and I felt an immediate pain.
Yes.
I reacted to that person, and I was aware of it's my pain.
Yes.
I was feeling self-responsible and even compassionate with it, but and I had the urge of telling it to the other person. So I said that.
Yes.
Hopefully, I found a way that I was keeping myself responsibility, but still I wanted to express it. And then the other person recalled.
Yes.
And couldn't
yeah.
take it or felt it was his fault
yeah.
or whatever. And I'm just wondering, and there I got stuck somehow.
Yeah. Got stuck, in other words, you didn't know what to do at that
yeah,
moment.
Whether the next time I just do it with myself.
Yeah.
Or, but still, no, it doesn't feel right. It felt very good to,
yeah.
it, especially to live from this vulnerable place and
yeah.
to express it. And
mm-hmm.
and I felt, if I can express it, I can move on somehow. I can come back to this fullness.
Okay.
And not hold back like I usually do.
So there's a couple of things that come to my mind as I hear your experience. Number one is asking myself, what is my need when I express it? Is it to restore the fullness for me? Do I want that for myself? And that sounds like that's part of what you wanted, to express it and move on. But I also want to remember the principle of mutuality. You know, the principle of mutuality is I express myself to another, and it's that other has their own being, their own self, their own authenticity. And the other recoils and reacts also. So that if what I say becomes a stimulus for their recoil, then my purpose in expressing myself is more than just for me. It's that I can create a space of mutuality. So then I bring compassion to the other if they're recoiled, if they're in pain. I listen to them. I bring my presence to them. Because it's only that way that I think I can restore the flow of the connectedness between me and the other person. And of course, we all know that's not necessarily always easy to do. But I want to remember that that is there for me to do if I choose to express myself, whatever I choose to express myself. And the other person doesn't receive me in the way that I'm intending to, and there's a reaction, then I want to stay present with them if I have my inner resources, if I have enough resources to be able to be present and stay in, then it becomes a flow between me and the other person. So that's one of the options. The other option is to stay more deeply connected with myself before I express myself. Yeah. Of course, that's another entire process. Okay.
What I find difficult, actually, is when there is a wounded part that is touched.
Yes.
And there is a kind of mechanism that when this wooden part activates, something also doesn't want to feel that.
Yes.
And there's something is blocked, not able just to, yeah, to go through this and experience compassion, because all the whole system is like that, you know.
Yes, so. Exactly.
And this is challenging.
Well, I think you've identified, I think one of the, as I experienced, one of the primary obstacles to inner compassion is finding those parts in me that are not easy to be present to, because there's this recoil, a block, fear, whatever that is in that part of me that I'm protecting. So that then there's that inner work of cultivating that relationship with a part of me.
With what?
That relationship with a part of me that's holding, that's fearful. The wounded part.
Yeah. Yeah, but there is something before this wounded part that doesn't want to feel.
I understand that. That is the extension of the wounded part, which is the protector.
Okay.
The protector is the part that doesn't allow me to feel the wounded part.
Okay.
So, yeah. So understanding, having an experience to be able to recognize that, oh, this is what I'm encountering within myself, the part of me that's protecting. And then I bring empathy and compassion to that part. Listen to it deeply. What are you protecting? What are you scared of? Yeah. Okay, so I think that is the, yeah, what I wanted to express as the kind of the initial sort of foundation for the nature of what we will be focusing on this week. And any other questions? If there's any other response, is that, how are you taking this in? Yes?
Yeah, thanks. Really, found it really helpful to get that picture really helpful. Mm. What I'm hearing, what I'm connecting to is really helping me. And just really helping me to know that I'm in exactly the right place right now where I need to be.
Yeah.
I'm feeling confident that I'm getting a lot of it, but I'm sure like many people here, there are bits of this practice that I'm able to do more, and bits of it that I'm able to do less, and
yeah.
then the times and the moments where I can do more, and the times and the moments where I can do less, and the thing that where I'm at right now is definitely out of the flow and
yeah.
really without hope. So there's this
sure.
big thing, hope just keeps coming up. Where's hope? I'm sure you're going to come into this, but that point where I'm so disgusted with myself that I have no desire to be compassionate
yes.
to myself, and that I have no hope that I can come back to the flow and stay in it
mm-hmm.
in a way that's worth it.
Yeah.
So there's something really here for me around, yeah, just
mm-hmm.
helping to me to find some hope so that I can just keep taking the,
yeah.
the step. So I guess I just kind of wanted to share that's what I'm really
mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. I appreciate hearing that. Yeah, I think as you're sharing that, I think it's obvious that you know that we are going to be practicing this.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess one of the metaphors I'm having is here we are together, and we're about to embark on a journey, and I've just showed you the map. I showed you this great big map, a 3D map, and said, we're going to go into the jungle, through this valley, climb these trees, up this mountain. And some of you are going, whoa, I don't know that I can do that. That's kind of hopeless, that. Because, you know, I've got this leg injury. I can't climb that mountain. Something like that. This is the map. And then some of you might be excited about it because, you know, you're adventurous. But this is not the territory. It's a little bit of the territory. Maybe you're able to intuit the sense of the journey, but we don't know the journey until we're actually there, in the midst of it. You know, slopping through the mud and the rocks, finding the wild animals coming out. What do I do with this? Going to this little place that's an oasis and say, I just want to stay here. I'm safe. I don't want to go. You know, all these different images of this map and journey. So when we go into the journey itself, it's entirely different. I think now would be a